cricket, lovely cricket.
We're back after a year off the airwaves. 98 Not Out is back and in full effect. Apologies if you missed us, but work got in the way and it meant I couldn't get back here in time to the sunny uplands of Phoenix FM Towers. But many thanks if you've been following on the podcast, which I've kept going. Had some amazing guests. Stuart Broad, Kumar Sangakkara, David Lloyd. And we're going to keep all of that momentum going as we come back on the air. In the usual slot, Thursdays at 6 p.m. right here on Phoenix 98 FM. 98 on the FM dial in the central Essex area. By the internet, phoenixfm.com. Shout at your smart speaker to play Phoenix FM. Many ways to listen. And don't forget, the show gets downloaded after I've got home and had a cup of tea myself. Just head to phoenixfm.com, look for programs, look for 98 Not Out, and you can listen back. And remember to tell your friends, share it far and wide. And of course, we're across social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, although we're too old and grey to be doing TikTok and Snapchat and any of that. But if you want us to do that, let us know. As always, get in touch with the show via email radio@phoenixfm.com. Title your mail 98 Not Out. Let me know what you're thinking. And of course, you can use all the social messenger functions. Packed show tonight. We've got the Grumbler. We've got Rahul Patil from Wellington, New Zealand. He's heading off to the Cricket World Cup, so we'll be hearing from him. And then, last but not least, Mr. Spencer Davis, who is a committee member of the Essex branch of the Lord's Taverners. And he's going to be telling us everything that's been going on with the Taverners and some pretty spectacular upcoming events as well. So stay tuned.
Man called Jah Thomas in a rubber dub style. Man called Jah Thomas in a different style.
Man chucking in a little bit of music as well along the way. So it's not going to be too chat heavy. But if you've listened before, you know what to expect. Remember this. It's cricket birthdays of the week. Starting us off, Ravi Ashwin turned 38 this week. Jimmy Neesham, who's played a bit of cricket in Essex for Upminster, 33. The man, the legend, Darren Goff, 53. Another Essex name, Derek Pringle, hit 65. Winston Davis also 65. Another Essex man, Neil Burns 58. And Rashid Khan 35. And today, a big seems a big day in West Indies cricket for birthdays. The one and only universe boss himself, Mr. Chris Gayle, 44. Curtly Ambrose, another legend, 60. West Indies opener John Campbell turns 30. And on this day in 1901, Windies legend Leary Constantine was born. And then later on this week, we've got Martin Crowe, 61. Ed Joyce, 45. And Blowers himself, Henry Blofeld, turns 84. As always, an amazing lineup of people there celebrating their birthdays. And if you are celebrating your birthday, don't forget, let us know. Email in at radio@phoenixfm.com. And we'd love to hear from you. And we will read you out your birthday on air. You can even tell us how old you are. But if you don't, we'll find out anyway. Shout out to Mr. Daniel Hagger, who just rang just before I came in here to wish me good luck. And good to hear from you, Dan. I think we'll have to get you on at some point. He's a avid Essex cricket fan. He's been down at the match today. It's a big day in the county championships between the top two, Surrey and Essex, slogging it out. Last I heard, it had been called off at Chelmsford, though. So Essex were going well, but then 20-year-old Tom Prest got his first county championship ton as Hampshire fought back and avoided the follow-on. They recovered from 144 for 5, and at the close, when rain, bad light and everything stopped play, Hampshire were on 322 for 8. They're 125 runs behind. One day to go, so it could be interesting tomorrow what happens there. Meanwhile, over at the Oval, title favourites Surrey were held up by Karen Nair's brilliant unbeaten 144 and 114 run 8th wicket stand with Tom Taylor at the Oval before bad light and heavy rain arrived to further frustrate the county championship leaders. Surrey, 105 for 6, chasing 357. Now, sticking with Essex, there was a lot of noise travelling around social media and the like from first thing this morning, where stories were being reported in newspapers about Alistair Cook imminently announcing his retirement. But this was not to be. Essex put out a statement at lunchtime refuting this, and they said that this is not the case. Discussions about Sir Alistair's future will take place once the season's ended. So no need for any speculation there. And let's see what the great man does. But there's the matter of the game against Hampshire and then the game against North Hants to take care of first. Right, now we've already had some success already in the county season. And last Saturday, a brilliant day for the Leicestershire Foxes, where they lifted the Metrobank one-day cup. And here to tell us all about it is the Grumbler himself, Mr. Richard Clark. Happy news this weekend as Leicestershire lifted the one-day cup sponsored by Metrobank this year in quite an amazing final. Richard Clark is here to tell us about an amazing day's cricket.
Yeah, I mean, it was fantastic. Just fantastic that we had little old Leicestershire winning their first List A trophy in 38 years, off the last ball. And what was so lovely about it was not only the fact that they're very small and they're beating a bigger side, arguably they're the smallest county on the circuit, but they were roared home by a really passionate crowd. If you watched it on the television, you could hear those supporters roaring them home. It really was. I can't remember a cricket game where the crowd have played such a significant role in the victory. But they always believed, because for me, they never looked like they were going to win at any point, really, until the end. I mean, they were 19 for 4. And obviously, Harry Swindle's got a century to get them up to 267. But Hampshire always looked in control. Chris Wright, the old Essex player, really did bowl a wonderful, wonderful penultimate over, using all his class, all his experience. And he's another little story that hasn't been spoken about, because I interacted with him a little bit when he was at Essex. And one thing that always struck me about Chris Wright, and if you look back on his tweets, he was always obsessed with health and fitness and nutrition and eating the right things. So consequently, you have an athlete maximising their potential. Chris Wright has been round to a lot of counties, you know, Middlesex, Essex, Leicestershire. He's off to Sussex, actually, next season. But he keeps on going and he keeps on having quality and he keeps on delivering, and he's never a superstar. But I love Jamie Porter for the same reason. They keep on persisting. They keep on going on. No one's ever going to make them a hero. They're never going to play for England, unfortunately. And I loved his penultimate over. I loved Josh Hull at the end, only 19, you know, limiting them to 5 off the end of the at the end of the over. Sorry, at the end of the innings off the last over. He's a homegrown product. Swindles was a homegrown product. The Captain Hill is a homegrown product as well. And there was talk about the fact that he had to work in a petrol station, for example, to get the money, and was living at home because he was struggling to get a career. And that's where you are at Leicester. It tends to be, and you know, I have a soft spot for Leicester because I studied there and did a little bit of work with the county 20 years ago. But often you're going down from a big county and you're ending up at Leicestershire before you go out of the game. And I don't mean that in any disrespectful way. It's just the way it is, that they've been amongst the doldrums counties. And this proved that doesn't have to be the case. They've got a great CEO in Sean Jarvis. I went up there to see the Essex game at Kibworth in the Metro Bank. And it was lovely. There was about 1,000 people, 1,500 people there. Kibworth County Ground, it was one of my highlights of the season. Sorry, a club ground. One of my highlights of the season. You had to bring your own chair. They didn't have enough chairs. And it was just lovely to have a throwback to festival cricket. Of course, we don't have that in Essex. But also remember that Somerset won the T20. Leicestershire won the one day. The way it stands at the moment, Essex have got a chance of winning the title. I think it'll be, sorry, but Essex have a chance. If Essex were to win the title, that would be three of the counties who don't host the tournament that shall not be named, winning domestic trophies. And that shows the strength in depth that the county game has and the strength of support that Leicester had in that game really buoyed me up. And if you go around Twitter on a Saturday night, there were people such as myself and younger, and of course it was a very young crowd that Leicester had following them at Trent Bridge. It just showed that when sport means something, when sport has deep roots of identity and meaning and location and geography and history, you're never really beaten. You know, I think there are a lot of people in that crowd that I saw, and I wasn't there, I saw it on television. There was a lot in the Leicestershire bucket hats, but there was a lot in Leicester City garb, right? Leicester had played the previous night. Funnily enough, they played down at Southampton, so it was Hampshire versus Leicestershire twice over. And it meant that Leicester City, the football foxes, were free. So I bet a load of people went down there who were Leicester City fans who went down with a cricketing mate, fancied a day out. It wasn't full. You could buy on the gate, I presume, and you had a great night out or day out. And that's because you know if you come from Leicester, if you've got any interest in rugby, it's going to be the Tigers. If you've got any interest in football, it's going to be Leicester City. If you've got any interest in cricket, it's going to be Leicestershire. If you've got any interest in basketball, it's going to be Leicester Riders. And these are the important roots of location and identity and meaning that make sport important. It proved that when we had the pandemic and there was no supporters in there for the games, football games, massive football games, were rubbish. They were terrible. They didn't mean anything unless people cared about them. And people care about them because of those deep roots of identity. That gives it meaning. And that's the importance of sport, and that's why we love it. And you know where I am with the tournament that shall not be named. I've banged on about it forever. But that's what makes me so angry, because it's false, shallow sport. And what I want is meaningful, deep-rooted sport that people care about. And that's what we got on Saturday with Leicestershire winning that trophy. And you could see how much it meant to local people. I'm going to sound like the League of Gentlemen there, but you can see how much it meant to local people and local sport that Leicestershire have won something. Little old Leicestershire, the team that you get, you think the authorities would like to get rid of, right?
Because the funny thing is, it reminded me of what's going on at Wrexham, and I thought to myself, Netflix have really missed a trick with this, because what a story if you'd done a 12-month fly-on-the-wall documentary at Leicestershire with the emergence of Rayan Ahmed, with the arrival of the CEO, the ground improvement plans, the ambition, the dragging the community and the sporting fans along with it. It just shows that all of this fantastic achievements can be achieved without this need for you know, 28,000 seater stadiums and test venues, whatever else. You don't need that. You engage the local community and support, and you get much more genuine results.
Yeah, I mean, you'd never get that off the ground because county cricket isn't seen as hitting the right demographic. It isn't seen as sexy enough to get the eyeballs in. And that's because the game hasn't been, it hasn't moved with the times in every sense, but it hasn't had the right leadership to help it move with the times. You know, I'm not counting out members and the membership of county clubs. Hey, that's why I'm called the Grumbler, right? It's a mickey take, it's a jab in the ribs at people who do sit there and act as an anchor on the game. And I don't count members out of the negative there. But, you know, you go back to when Leicestershire won the title. I mean, they've won a trophy in every decade in the last sort of 30, 40 years. And bear in mind, they are the smallest county. But I saw a picture of them going to Buckingham Palace to receive the county championship title. That might have been 75 when Illingworth went there. Anyway, that's how important it used to be.
Right?
That's how important it used to be. And now, you know, Gillette Cup used to be a massive day out. I went there a few times, you know.
Real end of season finale, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, it felt like the FA Cup of cricket. It felt like it was a huge celebration of cricket. Now, you can argue the T20 has taken that over and the Blast feels like a celebration of cricket. I get that. But we don't even hold it at Lord's. It wasn't even on a weekend when Glamorgan won it last year. Was it last year? I think Glamorgan won it. So, you know, we've deliberately hidden this game. We've not marketed it. And then you wonder why it's not seen as sexy enough for a Netflix documentary, right? It's not seen that way. If you look at what Netflix have done with tennis, with Breakpoint, with Drive
Formula to One,
for example. Yeah. I mean, some of that is it's not chicken and egg. It's not organic in that sense. They are pushing. That is a marketing tool that they're pushing. Their marketing tool that they're pushing. You know, Formula One under Bernie Eccleston had a very old way of doing things, and its resonance was waning, arguably like cricket was, in a sense. They've revitalized it now. They've sold it. They've got different approach to social media, which is massively important. So, you know, it's being positively marketed. Who there is pushing the county game? They're not. They're pushing an event that has no depth, has no history, has no long-term resonance. And now we're being told with the tournament that shall not be named, I'm off there again, I'm going for it again. But we're told that we can't get rid of it because of what we've done over the past 3 years. 3 years? Sussex are the oldest sports club in the world, aren't they? Sussex, I think they're the oldest sports club in the world, right? Well, they would not be one of the teams to benefit from the tournament that shall not be named, not to put too pun upon on it. If that works, county cricket, in my opinion, wanes. So what are we looking after here? What are we looking after? And I just saw, and that's where I'm going back to again. You know, it just proved that there's a market, there's a demand, there's a meaning, there's an identity. Why don't we tap into it?
Perfect. Well, it's been a fantastic season for Leicester, and I think it's warmed the hearts of all English county cricket fans to see one of the lesser fashionable teams do so well. And yes, let's hope it continues, and someone else can keep that torch burning for next year and beyond. Richard Clark, the Grumbler, many thanks for that, and we'll catch up soon.
Go to phoenixfm.com and listen to online guest interviews. Check the events for your area and listen to great radio online.
I did try and keep Richard from talking about the 100, but that's an impossible task. It really is. This is Miley Cyrus, a bit of music for you. This is Used to Be Young. Playing this one for my wife, Vanessa, who just loves this song. I hope you're listening.
The truth is bulletproof, there's no fooling you. I don't dress the same. Me and who you say I was yesterday have gone our separate ways. Live my living fast somewhere in the past, cause that's for chasing cars. Turns out open bars lead to broken hearts. I'm going way too far. That's 'cause I used to be young. Take one, pour it out. It's not worth crying about the things you can't erase, like tattoos and regrets, words I never meant, the ones that got away. Live my living fast somewhere in the past and took another road. Turns out crowded rooms empty out as soon as be crazy, messed up, but God, was it fun? I know it used to be wild. That's good. To be young.
Always a bit strange when someone at the tender age of 30 warbles on about when I used to be young. That's Miley Cyrus. Wait till you get to my age, Miley. You'll have plenty of other things to warble about. Take it from me.
Phoenix FM Travel News.
Right, a bit of travel for you. I know there's a lot of people that are on their way home this evening. I'll start off with the good news. The M25 clockwise. All lanes have reopened at Junction 27. That's for the M11 following an earlier broken down car. Traffic is, however, slow moving, so go carefully. Anti-clockwise on the M25, there's slow moving traffic from Kent into Essex approaching the Dartford crossings. There are also delays to the M20. And just a bit further afield in Essex at Braintree, slow moving traffic on the A120 East between the B1256 and Galleys Corner roundabout. On the A13 eastbound, slow moving traffic between Stafford to Hope, that's the A1014, and the Five Bells Interchange, the A176. On the A12 northbound, slow moving traffic between Junction 17, that's for Howe Green, and the A130 turnoff, and Junction 19 for Boreham and the A138. London bound on the A12, slow moving traffic between Junction 26, that's 8 Ash Green, and the A1124, and Junction 25 for Marks Tay and the A120, that's through the roadworks. And there's an ongoing incident on the A127 eastbound, slow moving traffic between the A129 at Rayleigh and a Progress Road. That's your traffic. And a bit of weather for you as well. I mean, if you've been dodging the showers this afternoon, they are clearing as I look out of the window at Phoenix Towers. There's a blue sky, a few clouds dotted about. The showers will die out through the evening and you'll have a low of 10, a high of 18. Today is the equinox as well, September the 21st, equal day and equal night. And after today, you get more dark than you do light. It's not good, is it? It's not good.
This is Phoenix 98 FM.
Okay, last weekend, after a bit of toing and froing, I managed to tee up an interview with a chap called Rahul Patil, who's a Kiwi cricket writer, who's got a really interesting story about being born in Goa in India and then coming down, having married a New Zealand wife via the Cook Islands. A great story, and he's just about to set off to cover the Cricket World Cup in India. So I caught up with him last weekend, and here's what he had to say. Good morning from England, where it is a sunny Sunday morning. But in Wellington, where Rahul Patil is, it's spring has sprung on a Sunday evening. Rahul, welcome along.
Thanks, Darren. Appreciate it. Yes, we've finally got some good weather coming in. The weekend's been really fantastic. Nice spring weather, 18, 19 degrees and lots of sunshine. So really, really looking forward to this summer.
Yeah. So we're here to talk about cricket. We're not going to talk about rugby because the All Blacks haven't made a great start to the Rugby World Cup, but we won't talk about that. We're a cricket podcast. So you're in Wellington, but originally I understand from Goa in India. So just tell us the story about how young Rahul gets into cricket and then ends up in New Zealand.
Yeah. Growing up in Goa was great. Like Goa's one of the only states in India that was ruled by the Portuguese and not the British. And for a much longer time as well. So the British ruled India for about 150 years, whereas the Portuguese ruled us for 450 years.
The food is very different in Goa, isn't it? Is vindaloo, does that come from Goa? Is that a Goa dish?
Absolutely. So whenever you see a chicken or a prawn vindaloo, it's always from, it's a Portuguese preparation. There's a couple of others, like, I don't know, you don't see them very often, but something called as a kafriel or a caldin or, you know, all these words, Portuguese preparations. The food is amazing. I mean, if you like your seafood, Goa's like heaven. Absolutely. So, yeah. So growing up there, soccer was always the number one sport in Goa. But somehow I always, the moment I picked up a cricket bat, it was always my number one sport. My earliest memories of cricket is watching India win the Champions Trophy down under, World Series of Cricket, it used to be called. This was in 1985, and I was 4 years old. And I remember my neighbors dancing in my apartment because we used to have the only color television in the whole of the apartment complex. So, yeah. But growing up, cricket was always a big part. Played for school, college, university. But it was mostly all tennis ball cricket for a long, long time. And then moved on to red ball cricket after that when I was about 15. Mind you, Tendulkar started playing for India when he was 16. So those were my dreams shattered right there when I started playing red ball cricket when I was 15. it was good fun. Wellington was never, ever on the cards. Like, I grew up in Goa, studied in Goa, worked in Goa. But life has its own own twists and turns. So met a lovely Kiwi girl and got married, and then that's what brought me to Wellington, because she's a Kiwi. At the time she was working in London and I was working in Goa, but we kind of decided to settle down here because it's a great place to bring up kids and lots of outdoors. So yeah, we moved to Wellington. Watch cricket all around New Zealand when I came here, because one thing that's very different to India is the grounds are more accessible. You can get tickets to games. So, you know, you go to a test match at the Basin and you can just turn up, buy a ticket and get in. And really enjoyed that side of things because I've only watched cricket at one stadium in India till today. And I'm a cricket media journalist now. And I've watched more cricket outside India than I have in India. So, but yeah, I currently work as a relationship manager for a multinational bank, which is ANZ. So through them, got an opportunity to actually go and work in the Cook Islands. So the story around that is that during COVID, we were all working from home and things were getting a little stressful because I was trying to work from home. My wife was trying to work from home. We've got a couple of kids. So yeah, life was a bit tough. But then we kind of said, how do we get out of here? Where is one place in the world that there's no COVID and there's no social distancing and there's no working from home and then there are no masks? And we didn't have to go too far. The Cook Islands, which is 4.5-hour flight from Wellington, had no COVID because they just, it's an island, they shut their borders, and bang, that they didn't have any COVID. ANZ had its presence there, and I started looking up for jobs in the Cook Islands, and next minute, there was a relationship manager opportunity there, applied for it, got it, and off we went on a plane to the Cook Islands. And that's been probably the biggest turning point of my life, going to the Cook Islands and actually getting the kind of opportunities. I guess a lot of people might be wondering where the Cook Islands are. So they are a Pacific nation, like close to Fiji, Samoa, Tonga, all these countries. They're a collection of 15 islands. The total population of the Cook Islands, all 15 islands together, is 15,000 people. The main island is an island called Rarotonga, and that has got about 8,000 people on it. So that's where the ANZ was based, and that's where I was based. And the funny thing about Raro is, because it's so small, everybody knows everybody. So within, if you live there for about 2 months, you know all the people on the island. If you want to go around the island, it takes you about 35 to 40 minutes by car, because there's one road that goes around the island, and then there are roads that go inside. But it's a very, very tiny place. So yeah, I started working there, and there is one newspaper there called the Cook Island News. And they are the ones who was to write about sport and politics and everything there. But there was no cricket there. And every day when I used to pick up the newspaper, I used to look in the sports section, and there was no cricket covered at all. So that was a bit frustrating for me. So when the T20 World Cup was taking place in the UAE, I bumped into one of the journalists at a pub, and I hit him up and I said, are you guys going to cover this or what? And he said, oh, we'd like to, but I don't think we've got any resource to do that. I'm like, oh, okay. He said, but why don't you talk to the editor and ask him? So then I went to, rocked up to the office one day, and I said, hi, are you guys writing about the T20 World Cup? He said, no. I said, well, what if I wrote for you? And he asked me two questions. He said, have you written before? And I said, no. And he said, do I have to pay you? And I said, no, because I actually have a full-time job as well. He said, great, you're hired for a week. We'll keep you on. We'll see what's the reaction we get. And if it's good enough, we'll keep you on.
Yeah.
So that's how I started writing for them. I've been writing for the last 2 years for them, and it's still been going great. It's very interesting, though, because the club scene in the Cook Islands is quite small. In Rarotonga, there are about 8 clubs that play cricket. I started playing for one of them when I went there, and at the prime age of 39, I managed to win the Raro Premier League, or the RPL as it's called, with my team. They'd been playing in this tournament for 14 years and they'd never won. And I think the only two new players to come that year was me and another Kiwi guy called Dan, and both of us kind of played quite an important role in making sure the side won. So that kind of got me in the limelight a bit. Plus, I was writing for the Cook Island News. So Cook Island Cricket Association then asked me and said, look, we've got this tour that's going for the World Cup qualifiers to Vanuatu. It's called the East Asia Pacific qualifiers that are there for the World Cup. And they said the Cook Islands is going to participate. They said, you don't qualify to play, although you're a very good player, you don't qualify to play for the Cook Islands. But they said, we really need a coach. Would you like to coach? And I said, look, I've never coached in my life. I wouldn't know what I'm doing. So I don't think that's a good idea. And then, but then I knew of somebody else who was a very good coach. So I recommended someone else. And I said, he's actually a very good coach. Why don't you approach him? So they approached this other person, Craig, and they got him as coach. But then the president came to me again. He said, look, we need someone who knows the game to be a manager of this side. Would you like to be the manager? And then I said, yep, I'll do that. You know, it's a lot of admin work and stuff like that. But, and I said, I'll support the coach also with strategy and all of that. So yeah, off I went to Vanuatu with the Cook Island men's cricket team this time around last year. And we had a great tournament. There were six teams four teams there. And we played, each one twice. And we won three games and we lost three games. So we came out even Stevens. The good thing was that even on the last day, on the last game, we were in with a chance of winning the whole thing. We had to beat Vanuatu by a certain margin to qualify, and we didn't manage to do that. But it was a great experience. For the first time, we actually got a ranking, because we had never won a T20 game before. And unless you win one, you don't get a ranking in the sides. So yeah, that was good. Great experience. And then after that, the T20 World Cup in Australia, the one T-shirt that I'm wearing. So that was coming on. And then I got an opportunity to go there as a media personnel representing the Cook Island News. But then Cook Island News didn't have the funding to send me to Australia and do all of that. So I had to find sponsors on my own, did a lot of fundraising. It all worked out in the end, because Cook Island News were quite generous. They supported me in the form of advertisements for businesses that wanted to support me. So they said, yeah, anyone who sponsors you will get a free ad in the newspaper. They'll get a free ad on the website. So we found a couple of people who would back me. The Cook Island Cricket Association also put in some money towards me. And I managed to go to Australia. So went to Melbourne, Sydney, Adelaide, Brisbane, did the whole. And it was just fantastic, because I'd only watched all these stadiums on TV growing up. And here I was sitting next to the world media, you know, and talking cricket. And it's quite funny, because you're in the lunch buffet and Michael Atherton's next to you, and then you you're trying to make a cup of coffee, and Nasir Hussain comes up to the coffee machine and he's trying to make a coffee, and it was quite a surreal experience for someone like me.
Did you get to talk to many of these guys? Did they give you any hints and tips?
Yeah, Michael Atherton's very, very good. He used to come and sit quite regularly in the media box. He used to have a chat with a lot of his English media journalists and all that. And I saw that they have quite a close relationship. The English media and the players seem to have a very close relationship. Also, I think because they reached the finals and won the finals, I saw a lot of England in that tournament. But it's not so much the case with some of the others, because the players tend to distance themselves from the media nowadays quite a bit. So you do notice that. But again, I met Michael Atherton again when he came down for the England tour of New Zealand recently. So, and he's great. I mean, for someone from India, because cricketers are so revered
and gods.
And demigods, for someone like him to be sitting next to me in a media box was just quite a humbling experience. So yeah, it's quite fascinating.
And there's a World Cup coming up pretty soon, actually. Are you going to be off to that, covering it?
Absolutely. So they say once you get the bug of going to all these world events, then you keep doing it. So I moved back from the Cook Islands to Wellington now. We were there for 2 years. So I've come back, but I still write for the Cook Island News. I also started writing for a New Zealand website called Sports Freak, which has got a subscription about 7,000 or 8,000 readers. And I also do a bit of radio work. So there's an Indian radio station in Auckland called Radio Tirana. And I do a little bit of Hindi analysis for them on air whenever there's a world tournament going on. I'm also going to be working this time, and I'm really excited about it, is with one of New Zealand's top radio broadcasters. His name is Martin Devlin, and I'm going to be working with him. He does a show on an online streaming platform, and the show is actually called The Platform. And it's a daily show that he does, a sports show from 1 o'clock to 4 o'clock, and I'm going to be on air with him. So yeah. Also in talks with a couple of other people currently with writing gigs. So yeah, we'll see. By the time the World Cup comes along, I'll be on my way. So yeah.
And what are your tips for this World Cup? Who's going to win it? Who's going to go further than expected?
I think when you talk of white ball cricket, England's always a fantastic side to back. I just think the revolution they've had in white ball cricket especially, and just the attitude that they play with nowadays, they're going to win more often than lose. England's a great bet. I think I love this format, because each team plays each team. rather than having the groups and stuff like that. You play, every team plays every other team. And I kind of liken it to the fact that when you boil milk, the cream settles to the top. And I think this format actually helps that. So over a long period, when each team plays each, the top four will rise to the top. And I think England's definitely one of them. Pakistan are looking really, really good. They've got a fantastic bowling attack, covers all bases. So I think they are a good one to back. India are hosts, so you never count the hosts out. If you see the history of the World Cup since 2011, actually, the hosts have always won. So India won in 11, Australia won in 15, England won in 19. So you're going to have the hosts. Number four, I'd love for the Black Caps to be one of the sides. because they are my, I don't know, I find it hard to say it nowadays, but they are my second favorite team. They're fast becoming my most favorite team. I hope that the fourth team or the Black Caps, but Australia's got a strong side always. I think those four or five teams are really going to be there.
Yeah. The Black Caps are here in England at the moment, in the middle of a white ball series, and it's producing really entertaining cricket. What about, I'll tell you, this is the, in England, you talk cricket with anyone and the same thing comes up, the 100. Now, it's just finished over here. It's been going for 3 years. It's very divisive amongst cricket fans in the UK. Some people, the guys that are new to the game love it, but traditionalists hate it. How is it perceived in places like Wellington or elsewhere? What do you think of this thing?
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? I mean, I talk to a wide spectrum of people because of the kind of work that I do, but the purists don't like T20 cricket, let alone the 100.
Yeah, that's true.
So we've got a very, very strong traditional following of the game who love the Test cricket. The problem we have in New Zealand is we always get two Test match series, and the generation that loves Test cricket do not love the fact that we get only two tests and then there's all white ball stuff. So there's this kind of anger inside people wherein they think the white ball stuff is actually coming in the way of the red ball stuff, and that doesn't help. I guess somewhere people need to understand that the white ball stuff is what is keeping the game alive today, and it's just the fact of the commercial side of things which is important. The youngsters love it, though. I know young people really love T20 cricket. It's no-brainer when you see stadiums being filled in for T20 games out here as well. So even when the local derby happens, the Super Smash, as we call it.
That's right.
The Wellington Firebirds, when they play and I go to the basin, it's quite a spectacle because a lot of people do come to watch, but nobody comes to watch red ball cricket, and that's just the plain fact of it. So.
Yeah. I think, in England, test matches are sold out all the time, but I think you watch coverage of test matches from elsewhere in the world, and it seems to be, you look at the stadiums and very rarely are they sold out or, even half full. As you say, the lifeblood may be having to be put on a life support system from T20 cricket, and we'll see where this 100 experiment is going to go. There's talk of it being modified, or even some people are saying it will end. But white ball cricket, as you say, is what's bringing the bucks in and getting the audience in. And without that, I don't think there's going to be, the red ball cricket, whether it's at club or county level or international level, is going to have a tough time.
I think the other part, Darren, is also the broadcaster. And they want a certain number of white ball cricket games when they sign their broadcast deals. So they also don't see a lot of value because then advertisers are not coming on board when you're showing a test match, because they feel that over a course of 5 days, nobody's got the time or the patience to sit and watch a five-day game. So their numbers, also a T20 game is normally played on prime time. So that means when people are at home and can actually sit down and watch a game, and that's all designed towards that. So you can understand why, but it is a shame. I mean, hopefully we can find a way for them to coexist and there be lots of red ball cricket, because we all love test cricket, don't we?
That's right. So what next for the Cook Islands?
The Cook Islands just played in a Women's World Cup qualifier as well, and things didn't go very as well as the men did. We played about six games there, and we finally won our last game. We lost five, so the women are not going to Bangladesh for the global qualifier. But next on the cards for the Cook Islands is Pacific Nations Tournament, which is going to be held in Auckland, which we call as the Pacific Cup. The women will take part in that. New Zealand cricket also are putting a lot of onus on Maori cricket in New Zealand. So they're getting the indigenous cricketers of indigenous origins to form a proper team and play. So the Cook Island plays a lot of games against these people. And then we've got the World Cup qualifier next year as well, which will be for 2026. That's coming up next year. So, yeah, we'll be playing in that and hoping to go one better this time and actually qualifying from the region. So,
fantastic. Well, now you're officially part of the 98 Not Out family. We'll be looking forward to getting some feedback from the World Cup and getting some video diaries from you about what's going on. So we'll tell our listeners and viewers to keep them peeled, because Rahul will be helping us out. Many thanks for joining us. And you go and get to bed, because it's getting on. It's 10:20 over there. Rahul, brilliant to talk to you. Really nice to meet you. And all the best.
Thanks, mate. Cheers. Appreciate it.
Rahul Patil. Some interesting observations there on cricket in the Southern Hemisphere. And what a journey that gentleman has been on. Really, really good. If you want to check out his website, sportsfreak.co.nz, lots of good stuff on there.
Phoenix FM.
Right, let's just round up a bit more county news. I mentioned earlier about the tussle going on at the top of Division 1 with Surrey and Essex. But on a wider spectrum, Durham have been promoted from Division 2. A remarkable turnaround from them after some pretty hefty problems they've had to deal with. We said about Leicester Foxes winning the One Day Cup. Sussex have been docked 12 points and have Captain Pajara banned for one game and dropped three players after a series of disciplinary offences, which has effectively dashed their hopes of promotion. Some retirees. Tim Murtagh has retired at Middlesex and was given a real send-off at Lords during the current match. He will move on to get a full-time coaching role at the club. Down at Somerset, wicketkeeper Steve Davis retires at the end of this season. Samit Patel, excuse me, friend of the show, has left Nottinghamshire but has, quote, more to give. So I think he's looking for an extended career in white ball franchise cricket. Some players released, Billy Godelman, Watt, Lakmal, Harrison, McKeerman, another retiree, have been released from their respective counties. At Essex, Aaron Nijjar, Will Buttleman, Josh Rimmel and Eshan Kali have been let go. It's a bit harsh on Buttleman from the people I've talked to about the situation. Yes, comings and goings. It's that time of year, unfortunately, on the domestic front, where you will see and hear of all this kind of stuff. Right, our last guest for this evening is Mr. Spencer Davis, who's going to tell us why Lord's Taverners is completely different from MCC. A lot of people seem to confuse the Lord's Taverners with MCC. So to make the distinction, MCC, Marylebone Cricket Club, is the guardian of the rules and the spirit of the game. Lord's Taverners is completely different. They may both have jazzy ties, but the Lord's Taverners is a charity to help underprivileged kids and those less well-off in society get into cricket and sport in general. Now, joining me is Spencer Davis, an old mate of mine who's heavily involved with the Essex branch of the Lord's Taverners. So, Spencer, just take the conversation further. Lord's Taverners, tell us all about it.
Well, good to see you again, Darren. The Lord's Taverners, as you say, is a charity. It was set up in 1950 at the Taverners Bar next to the Lord's Cricket Ground, hence the name Lord's Taverners. If you look at its founding members, it is a real who's who from the world of sports and media. So you're Roy Kinnear, Eric Sykes, Eric Morecambe, even the late Duke of Edinburgh was the patron, but also known as the 12th man. And he was a very loyal Lord's Taverner until his sad demise. The principles behind the charity is to give disadvantaged and disabled young people a sporting chance in life. So whilst it is, as you say, based around sport, it is far reaching. It has a much, much bigger impact on young people's lives.
And even the late Sir Michael Parkinson was a recent president of the charity as well.
That's correct. I mean, I looked this morning, everything from Chris Tarrant, Parky, who I met a number of times, Sir Trevor McDonald was the president, Robert Powell, who played Jesus Christ in the movie, Sir Nicholas Parsons, a very, very good taverner, loyal taverner, Chris Tarrant, David Walliams. A lot of the England cricket team are taverners as well. So it's one of those charities that you don't really know who's involved until you see the tie and the tie pin, which I often wear with pride, and it's a real conversation piece because it's a charity that slips under the radar, which is fine, but it does an awful lot of good in society for young people.
Yeah, I mean, if people watch Bargain Hunt, which is wildly popular on BBC One lunchtimes, Charlie Ross, who's a regular presenter on that, is quite often seen wearing his taverner's tie.
Yes, he is.
Pocket square, so, and he's a fantastic auctioneer at some of the dinners as well. I've been there. He does a lot to raise money. So talk us through the projects that are currently going on at the taverners.
We have a variety of projects, but the main ones are Super Ones, and that is a lovely disability cricket program that, if you excuse the expression, deals with children with lots of different disabilities, all different shapes and sizes, that's what I'm trying to say, and it engages these young people in cricket and allows them to get involved in leagues, and they all have the finals, which I go to every year at Lord's, which at Kane is a fantastic event. We have the Wickets program, that's Wickets spelt with a Z, and that really focuses on disadvantaged young people from very deprived areas around the United Kingdom. And the idea is to attract young people sort of out of the shadows as such, engage with them through cricket and sport in general. But whilst they are engaging, other agencies work alongside the Lord's Taverners to tackle things like obesity or malnutrition, county lines, drug crime, gun crime, knife crime. I mean, I've had the pleasure of meeting a young lad on one of the Wickets programs during the school holidays. They had a sort of a school camp at Felsa School, and I got chatting to him, and his story was so, so moving. Wind the clock forward a few years, I was at the awards ceremony at Lord's for a lot of the youngsters that have gone through a variety of different programs at the Lord's Taverners, and a young lad was on the stage getting the award from Chris Cowdrey. And everyone gave him a round of applause, heartwarming story about the Wickets program. And he went to walk past me and I tried to high five him. And he put his hand out and said, "Nice to meet you again." And that was that same lad that I met all those years ago at Felsted, who'd gone through the program. And now he's one of our ambassadors. And that's the real success stories, not just getting these youngsters out of disadvantaged environments and situations, but giving them some purpose and some worth in life. We have table cricket, which is something we'd like to talk about today. Try to raise money at the moment for the table cricket program, which is very similar to Subutio. It's cricket that's played on a table tennis table and designed for youngsters with disability. And each of those table cricket sets costs around £500. And that includes delivering the kits to special needs schools and also, in conjunction with Essex Cricket, the Lord's Taverners will then educate the teachers on how to use the set and get a league going. And then hopefully the schools will start to compete with each other, and eventually many of them will end up at Lord's at the table cricket final. And I think, Darren, there was an event in South Africa, I think, you and I have mentioned before about the table cricket being played there.
Yeah, that was quite a memorable. It was just before lockdown when there was a Lord's Taverners tour to South Africa. I think England were playing cricket out there at the time. And it was a really fantastic scene. There's a really memorable photograph of table cricket being set up on Table Mountain with David Gower, president of the Taverners, who was taking part. And I believe David Gower will be attending the upcoming Essex Taverners dinner at Braxted Park.
Very much so. And we are really looking forward to David giving up his time and coming to Essex. And he'll be joining Graham Gooch, two absolute legends of cricket. They're supporting our ball at Braxford Park on the 28th of October, where we'll be looking to raise money for projects like Super Ones and the Table Cricket Programme. I looked at some statistics today about Gucci and David. Graham got 8,900 test runs and David Gower got 8,231. So between these two legends, over 17,000 test runs. And they're going to be with us on Saturday, 28th of October at Braxford Park. We are selling tables at £950 or individual seats at £95. But all the money, 100% of the net proceeds, will be going into our projects across Essex. So those people that will join us, they will know that they'll be helping young people, both disadvantaged and disabled, in their own community across Essex.
It's a fantastic occasion. Not long away, is it? 28th of, of October. For tickets, I would suggest a starting point is the Lords Taverners website, lordstaverners.org, and just look for events. But failing that, get in touch with me via Phoenix FM, and I will point you in the right direction. But I seriously suggest getting along. Two fantastic speakers with Mr. Gower and Mr. Gooch. And I bet there's a bit of music as well, I gather.
Yes, we've got a great jazz funk band. That's my era. Junior Jump and The Bottom Line. Tickets include a three-course dinner and wine. And we've got a few other surprises, charity raffles, etc. And for any businesses that are looking to entertain clients, or better still, if people want to get together with their mates and do something really special, we've got a limited number of VIP tickets, which is tables of 10, that's £1,400. It includes sort of pre-event raffle, and the lucky winners that will be getting accommodation at Braxton Park, so there'll be no need to get taxis home on the night, and also a cocktail reception with Gucci and Gower, which will be quite special. But no, plans to be a really great night, and we're just looking forward to be blunt, spending the net proceeds after the event on some very, very worthy causes in Essex.
Fantastic. Well, I would suggest to anyone that's listening, get yourselves along. It'll be a great night meeting some absolute legends of the game and raising a lot of much-needed money for an absolutely superb charity. Spencer, thanks for joining me, and we'll catch up soon.
Thank you, Darren.
This is Phoenix 98 FM. 98 FM.
What an excellent chat that was. Right, well, that's it for me. The first show back. It was really good. I enjoyed myself. Hope you enjoyed it as well. Tune in next Thursday at 6 o'clock. Stay tuned. Here comes Mr. John Chubb, the legend, with the non-league show. I'll catch you next week.